You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday and welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East. I cover the Pacers for Forbes, the West Indianapolis Community News, and the Fieldhouse. Today, we're going to recap the Pacers' first game of 2019. Oh my gosh. It's the new year and I'm already screwing up. Of 2020 against the Denver Nuggets. I'm going to talk a little bit about rebounding from that game and Chad Buchanan's pregame comments from the Fox Sports broadcast. I haven't actually heard all of them, but I can get them from Twitter. And then look ahead at tomorrow's game against the Hawks. Before we look ahead, we have to look back at what just happened in one of the weirder games that I've maybe ever seen. Pacers fall to Denver at home, 116-124. They played pretty well. You know, 116 is good, and they gave up pretty good shooting to Denver, but, like, their defense felt okay. They just gave up a ton of second-chance points. So here's how well they played in the aggregate. I don't know how many hundreds of NBA games have happened this season, but the Pacers were the second team all year to lose when shooting better than 52% and having single-digit turnovers. So they took care of the ball, and they made their shots, right? That sounds like a recipe for success, and they lost. And the efficiency, the way efficiency works for offense is points per possession. And we always talk about, you know, better three-point shooting or better shots here and there or getting rid of the shot. You talk about maximizing the shot, but rarely do you talk about maximizing the number of possessions. And turnovers are the obvious way there. But Denver swung it the other way. They had 19 second chance points on 15 offensive rebounds. And that was the story of this game because that's what swung the game for them. The team shot relatively similar percentages. The Nuggets were at 52.9%. The Pacers were at 52.4%. The Pacers made 18 free throws, whereas Denver made 24. Denver hit 8 of 27 threes. The Pacers actually shot better from 3 than the Nuggets. So they did all the right things. They were pretty even there. They just gave up all these second chance points and all these offensive rebounds that you know, while the points per one possession are similar, Denver had more possessions and bada bing bada boom, they win. It was very frustrating because very few of the offensive rebounds were, you know, the Nuggets miss and then there's a battle inside and the Nuggets end up with it. Of the 15, I would say it felt like 10, maybe even more, were it hits, they take a three and it caroms off the rim and Will Barton happens to be standing right where it ends up 20 feet from the rim, or Michael Porter Jr. gets it on the wings. They were very few of the offensive rebounds. Actually felt like, you know, the Nuggets just like outdid it. Will Barton led them with 4 offensive rebounds. Jeremy Grant had 1. Gary Harris had 2. Like, outside of Jokic, they didn't get a ton from their interior players. They just were long offensive rebounds, which is very frustrating. In being in the media scrum with Sabonis after the game, he said, you know, a lot of guys have the habit of, from their whole life playing basketball, even if you're a big man, but mostly for perimeter guys, you're taught, like, okay, if they're going to set and not get back on D, after a shot goes up, like, crash to the glass, crash to the basket. But on these threes, the rebound usually goes long. So if you crash to the rim, you're going to miss it. And that happened a lot, especially with Jeremy Lamb, I noticed in this game. And that's why the Pacers lost, is that rebounding battle. They just couldn't do it, and it cost them. Because they actually got a ton of good offensive performances. Jeremy Lamb had season-high 30 points, took him only 13 shots. He was ridiculously good, hit all 5 of his threes. Turner had 21 points on 13 shots, and he only was 1 of 5 from 3. Even better, he was 6 of 8 inside the arc. He got to the free throw line. He got Jokic in foul trouble, which was a big reason the Pacers were able to be in this one for so long. Jokic had 0 assists, which is crazy. Sabonis had 18 points on 12 shots. Warren had 20 points on 15 shots. Like, the starters were tremendous scoring the ball. Aaron Holiday had 10 assists. TJ McConnell was okay, but they just couldn't get the rebounds to finish a stop. You know, defensive possession is not over until you get the rebound, and that cost the Pacers a ton. They just couldn't keep up. And it sucks when a game comes down to something like that, right? Because most guys in the Pacers punched above their weight. They did a good job. They shut down everybody on Denver except for one Michael Porter Jr., who I'll get to in a second, and they just lose. It's very easy to pinpoint this game on one particular thing, which is pretty rare. You know, usually a lot of factors are at play. When a team loses, they did this wrong, was led to doing this wrong, and it snowballs. But really, they did a good job of scoring and making shots to stay in the game or stay ahead or whatever. You know, they scored 37 in the first quarter. And their first shot defense wasn't truly terrible. They just gave up so many offensive rebounds, which led to easy second shots for the Nuggets in that game. Now, one guy who did show a lot of skill hitting his first shot was, like I said, Michael Porter Jr. I don't know what his season high before tonight was, but I know what his season high is now. It's 25, and he made 11 of 12 shots. He was literally on fire. He could not miss. They were all ridiculous mid-range pull-up fadeaways. Not all, but most were. I mean, he was just absurd. So sometimes that happens. You know, they played pretty well, and Michael Porter Jr. goes off, and you lose. Another thing to note with the rebounding, I think they're missing Brogdon here. Brogdon isn't an awesome rebounder, but he's their best guard rebounder by a mile, and Aaron Holiday had 0, and TJ McConnell only had 4. There's all your guard minutes, and that's tough to miss. I mean, obviously, miss Brogdon for a ton of reasons, but rebounding specifically is one of them. And they just miss him because he's an amazing player. Not that Holiday and TJ McConnell haven't been awesome this year, but Aaron was in foul trouble, and that limited his effectiveness in this one. And McConnell played 26 minutes, which is fine. He also played okay, but you know, 26 is probably a little too much for him. Just the way he plays with all the energy and spryness and always trying to out-cut or out-whatever, hustle guys, you know, that takes a lot of energy. There's a reason he's only played over 25 minutes. This is the second time the whole season he's played over 25 minutes. It's just not something the Pacers do very often. So I don't know how, and the other time Brogdon was also out, by the way. So it's just not something they try to do. They try to keep him in the 20s or high teens. 26 was too many, and he had a few moments that didn't look very good. That Aaron Holiday almost led the comeback in the fourth quarter. And the Pacers actually outscored the Nuggets by 9 points with Holiday on the floor. That should tell you how good he was when he was able to play. But unfortunately, they just couldn't rebound, and that's your game. It's not a bad loss. I mean, it just sucks when you let the game get away from you. They were up so much at the end of the first quarter, but it's unfortunate. But they'll have to find a way to rebound better. So let's talk about rebounding, and let's talk about Chad Buchanan's pregame comments after this break. So Nate McMillan, postgame, Mark Monteith's first question, of course, has to be about rebounding. And it's weird, like when you have two centers, you expect the Pacers to be good at rebounding. And it's not like they were bad. I don't want to harp on the rebounding as like this is a disaster type of thing. I don't, you know, in Miami it was. They had chances to grab that one. A lot of the ones they didn't get in this game literally flew to an area where they just didn't have a guy. And that's bad, but it's different when you don't, you know, it's not like they were weak in grabbing them or something like that. It's just different. But Nate said he harps on rebounding. He has been for 2 years now. He said you've got to finish the play. I agree, and especially on those ones like Sabonis said that carry them off the rim and they're flying out really far. You just got to get those. You know, you can't. I know it's habit to run into the rim, but when they're flying out like that, you just have to find your guy. You know what? There's minimal advantage unless, you know, it's not like Denver was crashing the offensive glass so much. I mean, 15 offensive rebounds looks like it. And if a team is doing that, you know, if a team is just completely crashing inside, then yeah, you should also crash inside. But if they're floating outside to stop your transition attack, then you should just box your guy out far from the rim. You don't need to be crashing in. And I understand for every player ever, their habit has been to do so, right? You know, a lot of these guys, most of them are taught, you know, crash the boards, get inside on misses. But another thing is, like, growing up, every player in the NBA was the best player on their team at one or most points in their life. Pre being in the NBA, so their whatever high school, college, AAU coach said they want that guy to have the ball, so they have them go under and get the rebound so they can take it up the floor. That's just a thing that happens. That's part of basketball growing upness, and all of a sudden you get to the NBA, it's like no, box out, you know, play a role and all that stuff. And a lot of these guys aren't used to that. It's a hard habit to break. And then especially something Sabonis said, I talked about how he said the thing about the long rebounds. He said it's frustrating. It is frustrating. Like when those compound, it just gets in your head. And it makes you so mad. And you could see it. Like Sabonis missed 2 free throws, and then he was so frustrated. And then a long rebound, and he slammed the ball on the floor. And you know, they kind of had to take their time to get it and get up the floor. You know, just it just compounds into making other mistakes when things like that keep happening over and over. So they just have to box out better. That's on every single guy. You know, even Sabonis had some rough rebounding moments in this game. He only had 5 defensive rebounds. Sabonis is an excellent rebounder, especially in the offensive end, but you know, he has some suspect defensive rebounding moments, in this game. Especially, I'm not saying he's a bad rebounder or anything like that. I'm just pointing out the occasional flaw that he has on the end of the floor. So they will have to be better if they want to win, right? That's 2 games in a week against great teams that rebounding could have potentially swung the game. They have to be a little better on that end. But on a little bit rosier news, Chad Buchanan was on the Fox Sports broadcast before the game. For those who don't know who Chad Buchanan is, he is the general manager. He and Kevin Pritchard are the front office. They do him and the president of basketball operations do different things, but they are in similar department, always in cahoots, all that. Chad Buchanan was on the Fox Sports broadcast, and he said, I'm paraphrasing reading Kaylin Cooper's tweets because she's the first person I saw who said this. Buchanan just said that Oladipo is past the body part of his rehab, and now it's about basketball and feel. So it would appear, and we haven't gotten this info from any doctor or anything like that, but it would appear that Victor Oladipo has healed to the extent where he could play in games, but he's not ready for that. You know, Nate McMillan always talks about things like he doesn't want to put a player in the game because they haven't practiced in a long time, you know, right when they come back from injuries. Not good players, but like guys who are on the edge of the rotation, stuff like that. I think that's where Vic's at, where it's a year of him not playing, where he has to remember how to jump right off of 2 legs and how to land and how to, you know, where his teammates are going to be and cut timings and all that kind of stuff, which takes a long time. You know, this team has been together for 3 months in organized ways, and they were scrimmaging together all summer. Vic couldn't do that. He's got to learn all that. That's why they're having a practice with the Mad Ants so much, just to get used to it. And this is a weird parallel, but Zion Williamson came back to a full practice today, and he said, you know, he'll just kind of know when it's time for him to come back, because players just have this thing where they just get the feel. They're finally like, okay, I'm ready. Vic's got to get to that point, I think, at this point in time, and I think his target date, I think if he's physically ready, that helps with sticking to that target date. But I thought it was interesting that Chad Buchanan said that. I think that means that, you know, no setbacks for Vic is something we've heard recently. I think that means that they know, you know, it's getting close. And I think given what we've seen of Vic at practices and given these statements, that it's safe to assume that the Woj reported timeline from Christmas of late January makes a lot of sense. So that's good news. It was awesome. It's always fun to see Vic on the sidelines in these games now, throwing his water bottle up and scratching TJ McConnell's head and stuff like that. So if his return is soon, the Pacers' rebounding issues might not matter, because they're going to be a better team by having Victor Oladipo back. Although, important to note, Caitlin followed up. Chad Buchanan did maintain that there is no timeline for his return. The team continues to not publicly release the timeline, despite someone giving Woj some information that there is a timeline. So we'll see. But that's all for notes from this game and what went on today. Let's look ahead now to the Atlanta Hawks, who I hate talking about, but let's do a segment on them before tomorrow's game. The Hawks are just so boring to talk about. You know, with the Nuggets, who they just played, there was, you know, if you heard my pod with TJ McBride, there was intrigue on what Jokic can do for a team and how he warps a defense and how Will Barton is just crushing the impact stats and Jamal Murray can score and all these wing guys can defend and make plays and yada this and that. And with the Hawks, it's just like no one is interesting. Like one day, I think John Collins and DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish and Kevin Huerter and Trae Young. Trae Young's already a hit, and then odds are one of those guys will be pretty good and one of those guys will be good and they'll be a good team. That today is not that day. You know, those guys will be fun to watch, and watching young guys grow is interesting, especially if you're a fan of the team. But if you're not, it just isn't interesting. And as much as I want to root for Trae to be awesome and have better teammates, because if you watch, like, he's averaging 8 assists per game with just, like, nobody play finishers on his team. Not that these guys are nobodies. Again, they're NBA players. They're good. They're going to probably all be on the Hawks for a while. But he could just be so special with better teammates, and it makes me sad. If he, like I said to Adam on Monday's show, if he can score 48, and they still lose, they just have no shot of winning games. It's just going to be so hard for them. And John Collins helps a little bit. They actually won recently, which was more than we could say the last time these guys played. They actually haven't played since December 30th. They haven't played in like 4 days. They beat the Orlando Magic, but Collins helps them a little bit, but not enough that they're actually good. And I talk about this with other teams, you know, oh, they have this guy and this guy, or they're leading us this guy, and they're only right around four or whatever. They don't have a ton of playmaking. Well, Trey is obviously a ton of playmaking, and that's why he plays 35 minutes a game. After him, their best assist guy is Evan Turner at two assists per game from Evan Turner. They have no one else in the twos. Everyone else is in the one. Oh, excuse me. Kevin Herter's at 3.4, but he's only played in like half their game. So they just do not have good playmakers at all. They really rely on Trey to do everything for them. We saw that in Indiana, and the Hawks actually won the Trae Young minutes and then just lost when he was out, and that was the game. And then in Atlanta, the second time, the Pacers played better. They weren't on a back-to-back. It was easy. They didn't quite coast. They were up 10 to 15 the whole game. But the Hawks just aren't very good. And what makes this even worse is this game is a back-to-back for the Hawks. They travel from Boston to Atlanta, their home state, or home whatever, home arena. So sure, it's a home game, but they're traveling there, and it's a back-to-back. Well, the Pacers are not in a back-to-back and can travel, get a good night's sleep and stuff like that. So the Hawks will be the slow-footed Hawks, potentially, which makes this even a less interesting Hawks team. So the things to watch for with them, we all know Trae Young and what he can do, right? He is quick enough to get to the rim, and he's a solid finisher. He can draw fouls. He takes almost 8 free throws a game, and it's a ton of them. He's an insane three-point shooter, both given the style and accuracy of his threes. He's going to warp the D. He'll score a ton of points. I mean, he kind of law of averaged his way through the last game these guys played, assuming he'll be better than that and worse than the first time. And then John Collins, insane roll threat, pretty good around the rim, good rebounder because he's got a speedy, quick jump. Everyone else is basically just like DeAndre Hunter's this rookie who can like kind of dribble and create for himself, and he's known for his defense, but they rely on him to do kind of a lot, and he's an under 40% shooter as a rookie. Jabari can score on the basket, pretty much stinks at every other part of basketball. Cam Reddish, same as DeAndre Hunter. They ask him to score a little bit, not very good at it, shooting 32.1% this year. So Kevin Herter's their second guy that I like, but he's not shooting well this year either, and he was banged up. They just don't have much of anything to get stuff done. I mean, their best center is Alex Len. Like, that should tell you all you need to know about the Hawks. And they're just a bad basketball team. So I expect the Pacers to bounce back and win this game. They've already beaten the Hawks twice. There's no reason they shouldn't beat them again, especially with Atlanta on a back-to-back. Get your confidence back. Remind everybody how good you are. Shut down Trae Young and feel good about it, and then move on. I expect the Pacers to win this game. I do not expect the Hawks to have enough. They just aren't very good. So that's it. That's all I wanted to talk about. I'm so sick of talking about the Hawks. This is two seasons in a row where I feel like I have to talk about the Hawks all the time, and I just get sick of it, and I get so excited when Hawks-Pacers are done so I can stop talking about it. Is this the last time these guys play this year? If so, that would be sick. I believe it is. So I can stop talking about the Hawks next week. I can't wait. Thank you guys for tuning in to the first game recap of 2020. Hopefully the Pacers can get their first win of 2020 tomorrow night. We will be back Monday with a weekly show. Adam will return from his vacation, so he will do two of the shows next week if you prefer his voice to mine and his thoughts to mine. That is all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast, and we will see you guys tomorrow.